All right, here we go. It's a brand new episode 93 of the Ajis podcast. It's Jason Martinez. It's Harry Mays. And we have a very distinguished guest for this week's episode, Harry. I'm so excited. One of Harry's favorite guys and my favorite guys. Played 2,247 Major League Baseball games, but the highlight of it all will be his appearance here today on the Ajis podcast. Welcome, Larry Bo. What's going on, Bo?
Oh, not much. Just trying to get our team untracked here. We notoriously get off to these slow starts, but I'm not worried about it. I like our team. I like where we're at. We've had a couple bad games as far as the conditions were concerned, but that's what happens when you start in March.
Oh, it's awful.
We start so early, but
it's awful. Yeah. And I one thing I've learned, just watching baseball for all these years is you just don't get too wrapped up in what happens early in the season, positive or negative. Like these teams that start out great guns and winning, you know, the first 8-10 games, a lot of times they're back in the pack come June.
I know. It's a long haul, man. It's not a sprint. And sometimes it takes a team a good month to get their bullpen lined up of how they want to use guys. The rotation right now seems really good for us. You know, the bottom line with us, when we hit home runs, we win. You know, we got to get away from that. We got to be able to win games without having to hit the ball out of the ballpark. So,
yeah,
you know, like I said, you know, 2-4. Last year we were 1-5, so we're better this year than we were last year. But it's going to be a two-team race in our division. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's not even hitting season yet. I mean, no. Freezing out. But would you rather them start later, lessen the game, start later and end a little earlier, have the World Series a little earlier to avoid any weather in the fall as well?
I definitely would. 162 games. I mean, that's a lot of games. And I understand that the owners, they need that revenue, put people in the seats and everything. But play 150 games or something like that, start it a little later, end it a little sooner, I think would be great.
How about those poor folks that sit through that rain delay the other night down there, man? I'll tell you, they're better people than me because, first of all, I wouldn't have gone. I would have sold my tickets if I could have. But they go down there and they sit through that stuff. I mean, more power to them.
And you know, the other thing, Harry, is if you looked at the radar, I have no idea what the thought process was there. This green was backed up for so long all the way down to Washington and I don't know. I'm with you. I'd have just stayed home and turned the rain check in. And as it turned out, it was terrible, not only for the fans, we had a bad game too. So all the way around, everybody lost that day. There's no question about that.
You wait to see a bad thing happen through that, and you're wet and cold at that point. Hey, but let me ask you about the pitch clock and, you know, about limiting the shift and what it's done for the game. First of all, from a player perspective, I wanted to get your answer, what you would have thought of it. And then as a manager, what did you think of it?
I love the pitch clock. Back when we played, they got it and threw it. There was no wait for the walk-up songs and all that stuff. They made an out. The ball got back to the pitcher. They got on the mound, and he threw it. I like that part of it. There's other things I don't like, the rule changes. I'm not a big fan of not being able to break up a double play or break up the play at the plate. Yeah. But again, it's for safety reasons, and I get it. The owners and the general manager want their product on the field, not on the IL. I don't like a man on second in the 10th inning. Let's play this thing out. I mean,
that's hokey to me.
The mark of a good team is to be able to overcome a 17-inning game on Monday and get through the rest of the week because you used your relievers. I mean, that's part of the strategy. That's part of the long distance run that you're in here when you start in April and then in October. And hey, if you have two 17 inning games, so be it. You know, you got to find a way to get through that. But the fact that the game has changed so much now, relievers only throw an inning. They don't want extra inning games because you're going to wear out your pitching staff. Starters go 5 or 6 innings. We're very fortunate with our rotation. With Wheeler, Nola, and I'm throwing in Ranger because I thought he had an unbelievable spring training.
I like him.
You know, you got three starters that can go deep in the game once we get rolling here. Yeah. That's going to take a lot of load off your bullpen. You know, a lot of these teams are going for 9 to 12 outs right out of the gate in spring out of spring training. By July or August, those bullpens are going to be worn out.
Yeah. Arms will be dead.
How about this Zach Wheeler, man? He's already in midseason form already.
You know what, here, when I first saw him this spring, we were talking, and I said, you know, I have never seen you get lit up on the mound. I've seen you give up two or three runs. And then he looked at me, he says, well, you didn't see that game in Williamsport last year. And that brought back to my attention. Remember that game? I think it was against, who was it against? Baltimore. So he gave up five runs in the first inning in Williamsport. Uh-huh. That might have been the only game I've seen him really get lit up. But this guy, he's on top of his game. He keeps you in the game, whether he has good stuff. Like the other night, he was throwing 92, 93, and it was very cold, but he kept you in the game. Without the air, he doesn't give up. What's he give up? One earned run, maybe?
Yeah.
But he's been lights out. And Nola had a tough outing, his first one, but I'm expecting tonight for him to bounce back. And like I said, Sanchez has been lights out.
You know, we see these guys every fifth day as fans, but you're around the club. And you saw him in spring training. Tell me and the audience about what these guys are like, you know, like a Wheeler, the other 4 days as he's preparing for his next start.
Well, you know what, Harry? Wheels and Nola, the reason I bring up those two, because those are our two aces, they work unbelievably hard. The day after they pitch, they're back at it doing their work before their next start, which is 5 days usually. They're accountable. They're held accountable. You never see them get upset if a guy makes an error behind them. And if you walk in the stadium and you don't even look at the scoreboard, you wouldn't know if they were up five runs or down five runs. They're very professional in the way they go about their business. And I think that's what makes our team very dangerous. Whether we win the division or not, once we get in, when you got two guys like that at the top of your rotation, now you can throw in Ranger. I don't know if I'd want to play this team. And I know Atlanta's been the juggernaut of the East, but the last couple of years we've had their number going into October. And I see that happening again, except I would like us to win the division rather than chase all year. That just wears you out when you do that from May on. You're chasing. And by the time you get to October, mentally and physically, you're wore out.
Mentally, you're just gassed at that point. You've already kind of spilled your bucket. And when you get there, and then that realization that you got in is a letdown and you can't get back up, can you?
No, it's really difficult. The only thing that sort of makes sense, and I've listened to the manager of Atlanta 2 years now, a lot of these teams don't like that week off. You know, they have momentum.
Keep it going.
Yeah, and usually, and you know, in our situation, 2 years ago especially, that momentum carried us all the way to the World Series. And I thought I was going to do it again last year, and we came up short. I got to give Arizona credit, but I would have lost a lot of money after we took a lead of 3-2 coming back to Philly, and all we had to do was win one game.
Yeah,
the way we were playing at home, that's why you play the games. But nothing against Arizona. They're very athletic, but I was very disappointed last year the way everything ended.
The bullpen preseason from a lot of outlets is getting a lot of love, of course they had a couple of rocky outings in the first two series, but what's your basic thought on how good this bullpen could be?
I really like our bullpen. We had a lot of power arms down there, and the fact that most of these guys come in and they've usually pitched one inning, so they go full bore. I mean, they're going to throw 97, 98, and in Alvarado's case, hit 100 every now and then. I like the makeup of our bullpen. I would like to see our starters go a little bit deeper, which I know they're going to. It's just a matter of time now.
Yeah.
But I don't. The only flaw I see maybe is, I don't know if you want to say the fifth starter, but to be five deep, as you guys well know, there's not too many teams that are five deep. Mm-mm. I mean, Walker. We want him back. Obviously, he won a lot of games for us last year. But, you know, I think we're in good shape right now. I really do. I'd like to see us hit a little bit better consistently. We just played a team that they struck out close to 40 times in 3 games, and they won 2 out of 3 from us. We got to start beating the teams we're supposed to beat. And then those real good teams that come in, you play 500 with them, then you're in good shape. But I like the way the direction of this team is right now. And, I don't see any issues really moving forward, barring any big-time injuries. You can't have a Wheeler or a Nola or a Ranger or, you know, Harp or any of those guys go down for a long period of time.
How can we get Johan Rojas to get on base like Larry Boa used to?
You know what, Harry? That's the million-dollar question. This guy's got so many tools. I know one thing for sure. He's got to cut down his swing. He's swinging up
too long.
He's a power hitter. It's a long swing. put the ball in play, use your speeds. I seen him try to bunt once so far. They're going to be patient with him, but that only goes so far. The runs he saves in the outfield is unbelievable. I compare him to when I played with Gary Maddox. That's how much good ground he covers.
That range, huh?
He's got great range, got a good arm, he can run. We got to get him to hit 245, 255, and then when he does that, he's going to be a big plus for us. But I'm very pleased the way Schwarb looks right now. He came into spring training. I think he lost about 15.
Yeah, he looks in shape. Yeah.
And we were talking about it at spring training. He said, I needed to do that for my knees. And the fact that he's getting a lot of hits the other way right now, that's a good sign, because usually in April he gets in that pull mode. But I like this approach right now, hitting the ball the other way, and he still gets his home runs.
Yeah, spray it around a little bit. But let me ask you about kind of the rite of passage to every season. You know, spring training, you've been going down to Clearwater forever.
Right.
Do you still get the same feeling in your belly going down when it's all going to begin and start all over?
I do, or I wouldn't be going down there if I didn't have that feeling, because they let me suit up. They let me hit fungos, throw BP. So I get involved in all that stuff, and I think if I was tired of it, I'd say, I think I'll pass. I just
go. You love it.
I do. I love it. And I like the vibe of this team. You know, two years ago, I take my hat off to Houston. They beat us. But last year, it left a sour taste in our mouth. I mean, those guys really felt that we should have moved on and played Texas in the World Series. So I really believe that they're carrying a chip on their shoulder this year, and they know the job's unfinished. It reminds me of our team in the mid-70s. You know, we kept winning and coming up short. We kept playing the Big Red Machine, the Dodgers, real good teams. But whether it be an umpire's call, a certain pitch, an error guy made, we came up short. I think we're getting to that part of our philosophy with this team. We got to get this done now, because the window, it's still open. But after a while, it starts to shut a little bit. We got a bunch of guys in their 30s, which is not old, but baseball-wise, it's getting up there.
The time is now.
Yes. Yeah. There's no doubt. If we don't get to the World Series this year, I'd be very disappointed. Barring any serious injuries, I would be very disappointed.
How much do you know and can tell us about what they have in the minor league system? Like, what's it look like down there?
We have a good minor league system. We have some guys down there that the number one pick last year, Aiden Miller, looks really, really good. We got a Latin kid that's 17 years old, a middle infielder. We got two outfielders down there. I think the area we're a little short might be pitching, but Abel's really come on. Mm-hmm. Painter, hey, this guy was the real deal. Hopefully this Tommy John fixes what the problem was, because he was lights out. You could put him right up there. Stuff-wise with Wheeler and Nola, obviously, he's not going to be able to pitch probably this year. And if he does, it probably won't be till August or September. And they're going to be very cautious with him. He's very young. I like our minor league system. I think it's really improved. I'd like to see a few more arms coming out of there, because let's face it, Wheels and Nola are getting up there in age. And I love Sanchez now, and Ranger. They're relatively young. So we got a good foundation here. I think Abel's going to be here sometime this year. Painter for sure next year. So I think we're in pretty good shape that way.
Yeah, you talk about those Astros. Don't they always seem to have an arm or two every year that you're like, where did this guy come from?
And he's throwing gas.
It's unbelievable. And another team that always does that, even though they've started out 0-8, Miami always has good arms, but they got three or four guys right now on the
arm there. They can throw gas in the beginning
right now, because I see all this knowledge and the analytic stuff and how it's going to help everybody. And I see this IL, not just with our team, but all of baseball. It's off the charts the way these guys get hurt. They have their dietitians, they have their own trainers, and they're going down like flies. It shocks me, because there's no question. These guys are bigger, faster, and stronger. But for some reason, there's a whole lot of guys that get injured really quick in this game. And you go look at those IL lists, it's a long, long list of players that, I think the Dodgers have four guys that would be top four in their rotation that aren't going to come back till July, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, Bueller's one of them, isn't he?
Bueller, Kershaw, yeah. Mays, he's another guy. They have a bunch of guys that have been banged up, Tommy John, whatever it is, and yet they still go out and they spend $1 billion on two players. And I scratch my head at that. But, that's a pretty good lineup that they throw out there every day.
Hey, Bo, let me ask you about the modern athlete, because, you know, you played in the 70s and managed for so many years. And the modern athlete's something that gets talked about quite a bit. We know about pitch counts now and, you know, load management in the NBA and all of those things. How has the modern athlete changed in baseball? And is that maybe the sport where it's changed the least?
Yeah, I agree with that. This load management, I don't understand. We just broke camp. We had a day off, and we have a load management day off for Bryce Harper. We had one for Bohm. I mean, the mindset when we played was, hey, we got to play 150 to 160 games every year. One of the reasons was because our farm system was really good, and you didn't want to get out of the lineup.
You want to lose your job.
You didn't want to go down it because some guy takes your place, and he goes 10 for 15. You're saying, oh, I might be down in the minor leagues. I think that part of it's changed. I think pitching-wise has changed. I mean, a horse is considered now 150 innings. And that's 30 starts. That's 5 innings a start. Whereas back when we played, Seaver, Carlton, Gibb, all these, I know they're Hall of Famers. They had 150 innings at the break. And we're, it seems like we're taking care of them that way, but yet they're still going down. And I don't blame the players. I blame the fact that, you know, they're going to fight City Hall. When they get 100 pitches, they're out of the game. I'm sure every one of these guys would love to go 8 or 9 innings and throw 135, 140 pitches. But because the way the situation is now in baseball, the analytic people get involved, the workload gets involved, you get the guys out of there. I guess bells and whistles go off at 100. I still have to see the guy that invented that number to say, after 100, they're going to blow out their elbow, they're going to blow out their shoulder. I still haven't seen enough proof of that, but that's just the way the game has changed as far as when we played as of now.
Hey, let's take Harper and Schwarber off the table, because to me, they're shoe-ins. Like they, to me, they could play in any decade, like any era kind of thing. And go back to your team in that late 70s that was making those, you know, steady strides on up until you finally did it in 80. I think there's a lot of guys on this team that really translate to that 70s, 80s baseball.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we got two guys for sure that came up in our system, Stott and Bohm. Those guys, to me, they would love to play 150 games. You throw Marsh in there, I know he's being platooned to a certain extent. He's proved a couple games that we've had early that he can hit left-handers. I'm sure he would like to play every single day. But I think the biggest thing here on that thing is, we had a core group that came up together. There were 4 or 5 guys that played A, AA, AAA. We won championships down there. Whereas you see teams now, you very seldom see a team that has a core group of guys. It's always free agents. I mean, take a look at this team now. With the exception of Bohm and Stott and Nola, all these other guys are free agents coming from other organizations, whether they be trades. And I think there's a meaningful thing that happens when you come up together. You have 5 core guys that everyone says, hey, we're going to build this team around you guys. That means something as you keep going up through the system and play A, AA, AAA. Plus the fans, especially with our AA and AAA team being so close, they get a chance to relate to these young guys as soon as they put on that AA uniform or AAA uniform, and they feel like they bonded with them before they even got here. But the biggest difference I see now is teams are going – free agency. You look at the Dodgers, I don't know how many guys they have homegrown, but there's not very many of them. But that's just the way the game has evolved now as compared to back when we played.
Even the 08 team was a team that came a lot of the, you know, with Utley and Howard,
Earl,
Jimmy Rollins, and Cole Hamels, you know, those guys. You supplement it with the Victorinos and the Worth and everything else.
There's something to be said now. It seems like you go out and get big free agency and you supplement them with your guys that came up through the system. There might be 1 or 2 guys, but I think right now we're in a position with our minor leagues, especially position players. We got some guys coming that they're probably still a couple of years away, a year and a half. But the fact that they're there now, that means a lot, because
he
can't keep writing checks out every year. I mean, this guy, I take my hat off to him. He wants to win more than anybody, and he keeps writing these checks out. After a while, man, you got to start, you know, restocking that minor league system. And I think we've done that to a certain extent.
Yeah. Now, what's the deal with this scoreboard issue with Castellanos? What do you know about that?
That's the first thing I read. I read that when everybody else read that. I have no idea. I don't know what scoreboard he's talking about. The scoreboard, the one he's that I thought he was talking about, is behind him.
The out of town scoreboard.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it's behind him.
I don't understand how that comes in.
I don't get it.
I see if you're facing it. I don't know. I read that this, the other day, and I'm going, that sounds weird, but I don't know. You got me on that one. I'm going to ask him when we get off they get off this road trip, because I go down to all the home games. I'm just going to say, where are you getting confused, or what where are you getting confused on fly balls, balls down the line, good balls in the gap? I don't know what it is.
What's he like?
He's not a bad dude, really. Uh-huh. He's a little strange. I mean, when I say
idiosyncratic, strange, I don't
mean bad way. He just
right.
If you ask him a question, he'll give you a one-word answer. He leaves you out there. But you know what? He's one of those guys. When he's hot, you ride him. When he's not, he reminds me a little bit of Haas. You know, when Hoskins, the only difference is when Hoskins went in a slump, he would go 0-for-2 and get two walks. It's the Cassidy, when he goes into these funks, he starts swinging at pitches that are completely out of the zone. But when he's on fire, you can ride him for a couple of weeks.
A lot of low and away stuff.
Yep, he chased big time. And that was our Achilles heel the last couple of games against Arizona. Not just him. Top of the order all the way down. We just got impatient, swung a lot of bad pitches, and that was our downfall the last couple of games against Arizona.
And speaking of Haas, he got himself in a little hot water like a week ago, pulling a little Chase Utley at second base.
You know what, here? There was nothing wrong with that slide.
No.
This game has changed dramatically as far as that goes. But I know Haas don't like the Mets, and I don't think anybody in the Phillies likes the Mets. So I'm sure the whole clubhouse was glad to see that. But he had a good series against them. And, you know, the Mets are known for being a little bit being a crybaby and everything. But I don't know. It turned okay.
I certainly did not like the Mets. We know that for sure.
I hated the Mets. Although most Philly guys, because back then we played them a lot.
Yeah.
Now you got playing everybody. You play them twice there and twice here. It used to be three times each there and here. So there's still a rivalry there. But the rivalry to me right now is us in Atlanta. It's not the Mets. The Mets are a little bit understaffed, I should say, or undermanned. I don't know what direction they're going in. Seems like I would think by the middle of the year, I could see them unloading a guy like Alonso if they're not going to sign. You know, depends on where they are in the standings, and with the extra wild card, depends on where they're at there.
Wow, what a punch to a lineup he would be at the deadline, man!
Big time.
Yeah.
I want to play something for you, Larry. You are a manager. And, you know, you have to keep control of that clubhouse. And you mentioned Castellanos. I think every locker room or clubhouse needs a wackadoo. You got to have a couple of those guys that are just a little different. You need dynamic in there. But the Flyers coach, John Tortorella, talked the other day, and he showed a really vulnerable side to himself and talking about the job he's doing as his team's leaking oil coming down the stretch. So I want to play this for you and get your thoughts on what he had to say. So here you go. Here's John Tortorella. Let me hit play. Where's the play button, for goodness sake? Hold on. I got to hit it over here. This is not a well-oiled machine.
No, it is not.
This comes down to, right? It always comes down to, they're going to quit on him. It follows me around. And so be it. If a player is going to quit on me, or players are going to quit on me because I'm trying to make them better people and better athletes, you got the wrong damn coach here, and you got the wrong damn people here. So I'm not sure what goes on. My job is I am going to push athletes, and I try to stay away from I have other things on my mind that I don't give you. I was in control the other night. What I said, I meant. And quite honestly, when I watch the tape now, I'm more concerned than just the second period, because of I'm so proud of the team getting here. And I guess now the narrative out there is, because I've heard from other people, that they're young, they're not supposed to be here. Bullshit. We're here. We're here. Face it. And let's be better. And I don't think we're ready to be better. And that's my problem with us right now. And it is my job. I have not done a good enough job to get them over the hump after playing those seven games. And then each game as it goes down, we have six left. I haven't done a good enough job to make them understand we have to be different now. We have to be at a different level. That's my frustration with me, and that's my frustration with the team. And if people can't handle it, so be it.
There he is. So be it.
That is awesome.
Bo, I saw you nodding your head.
I love,
from the same cloth.
I love what he said. I mean, and you know, I don't want to say it's the same thing, but when I took over this team the 4 years from 2001, I was coming into an organization that lost 100 games, and Terry Francona, who I think is a great man, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, had a bad team. Let's face it. It was just a bad team. I don't care how good a coach or manager you are. If you have a bad team, you're not going to win. So when I came in here, I had to change the culture, and we were almost the same thing there. Everyone says, oh, they're the last place team. They're this, they're that. Every year we played over 500. But what happens is the players, they say, oh, mentally they're saying, oh, we've already reached our goal. We've had a great year. And I think that's the point he's trying to make here.
Yeah.
I think players got to understand. The players today, like I said, they're bigger, faster, stronger. But they're very it's tough to get on them because, like he said, hey, this thing's following me around wherever I go. I'm too tough on them. You're going to lose the clubhouse. It sort of reminded me of when I took over there. And I agree with him. If you're going to lose a clubhouse because you want them to get better, you don't want them in this city, especially this city.
Wrong guy.
Right. Yep.
Wrong guy. And like he said, and if they think they have the right players, then I'm the wrong coach. And I think he made a good point there. I think he's taking a little bit too much heat saying, I got to get him better. He's got him this far. Now, players got to understand that when a coach, a manager, whatever, gets on you, he's not doing it for him. He's trying to make you better. And I think players say, the word I'm trying to use, maybe they're a little bit more sensitive with all the social media out there. They read this stuff and they say, oh, he's burying me. He's getting on me. I don't think that's the case. I think he's trying to make them and push them to another level. And with these last six games here, he's telling them how important they are. And if we got to get to the promised land, I'm going to keep pushing and pushing. And you can only push so far. After a while, the player's got to say, hey, I get what he's trying to do. But, you know, I think this thing about his reputation, it's like baseball. It takes one day to get a reputation. It takes 40 years to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where he's at this stage of his career.
Yeah. What's the primary thing, like when you're trying to, we hear that change the culture, you know, like what is, when you go into a situation like that, like what's the first thing you do?
I think the first thing you got to do is let them know that winning's very important. It doesn't matter if you lose 2-1, you played a good game. I'd rather play, win 6-5 and make 10 errors and win. I want to win every time I put the uniform on. This stuff about, oh, we played hard. You know, I get that. You have to compliment them when they play hard. But the bottom line is you got to move that column on the left a lot more than you move that column on the right. And getting a winning attitude has a lot to do with how you conduct yourself, how your coaches. But it also means how the general manager gets the players that you want
right
to handle this thing. This city's a tough city. It's New York, Philadelphia, Boston, that East Coast. You better find out the mental toughness of these guys before you sign them. They can have all the ability in the world, but if they're not mentally tough, they're going to have trouble handling this East Coast mentality of the crowd here in Philly, New York, and Boston. So changing the culture is a combination of things, getting the right players, getting the right coaching staff, sending the right message, letting them know this isn't acceptable coming in last place every year in Philadelphia. So you got to keep pushing that envelope. And you're going to, most of the time, you're going to get most of the guys on your bandwagon, but there's going to be two or three guys that are going to fight it. And that's what's tough when you're a manager or a coach. Those two or three guys, you got to get them out of the clubhouse because they can spread some stuff and it's not good for the organization.
Yeah. Those guys are an infection. I talked to Torts on Wednesday for our Hockey and Hound segment. And I asked him, I said, do you like winning more or do you hate losing? And his answer was so he can't stand losing. Winning is fleeting. Like you win, you're happy, okay. Right. But when you lose, you carry it physically for a day.
And you know, and as a coach, you sleep on it. You say, I wonder if I'm going to hurt this guy's feeling if I don't start him because he struck out four times the night before. You got to take all this into consideration. And, you know, before it was the manager, coach, they did this, and that's the way it was. Yeah. Now, if you do something to upset, say your superstar, well, now he'll call his agent. the agent will call the GM or the president, whoever's running, saying, well, you know, you got a bunch of free agents coming up and they don't want to go there because your coach is too tough on them. So you, there's a fine line there. And I can see him walking this fine line there. I think he's done a tremendous job at what he's done with that organization so far.
Man. Yeah.
I know he texts with Rob Thompson quite a bit as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Rob loves hockey.
Yeah.
And he was telling me, you know, that he likes his demeanor. He really does. Because I asked him about that thing that came out. He says, I loved it. And I said, yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Well, you talked a little while ago about spring training, about how you still love going down there and getting into it. One of the other benefits is you get to play golf in warmer weather. And we had featured you a couple of weeks ago after you had that hole in one, man. Congratulations. That was really cool. Tell us about
it. You know, somebody asked me, what was the greatest thing that ever happened to you in sports? Well, it's still number one, winning the first ever World Series. But I didn't realize the magnitude of this, because when I hit it, and, you know, I see Marshy up there jumping. He's watching the whole hole. And there was like three foursomes backed up. So I thought it was all set up to say, hey, make sure he thinks he hit a hole in one. And I was playing with
fake him out.
I was playing with Turner and Stott. Mm-hmm. And those two guys hit it pretty good. And they said, just get on the green. We're going to go for that. I said, okay, I'll get on the green. So I pulled out a 7-iron and I said, it's on the green. I guarantee that. Because I knew it wasn't short and I knew I didn't hit it long enough. So, but I see Marsh jumping up and down. And I went, yeah, right. You know, I thought maybe it might have been a foot or something. And then Trey picks out his range thing, whatever. And he says, there's no ball on the green.
No.
I said, get out of here, man. So that as we get in the cart, everybody's jumping up and high-fiving. And I said, this is a setup. And I said, where's the ball? Because I saw the other two balls that they hit. And they said, it's in the hole. I said, yeah, right. So I walk up there and I went, oh, my God. And John Middleton happened to be in that foursome there. And everyone said, you know, you got to buy drinks. And I said, I know. Uh-huh. And John says, don't worry about it. I got it. And I went, thank you, John.
I know.
But it was a big-time rush.
Yeah.
Reality set in the next hole here. The next shot, straight down the middle, par four. I went right into the houses. So it set in real quick, you know. Reality set in.
But you were floating for a good day about that.
Oh,
ace.
My God. I couldn't believe, you know. I said, man, hole in one. That's not... I talked to guys that have been playing for 15 years and said, never gotten one before. Never gotten one. Well, I'm not going to get another one. I guarantee that. But I'm going to cherish the one I got.
You got to play every day to see if you can.
Where was that?
Par three at the Biltmore was about 168 yards. I had a 7-iron. And we were playing good. It was a scramble. You know, we've been playing that tournament for like 35, 40 years. No one's ever gotten a hole in one. We have that. It's like starting off spring training tournament. And like I said, when I found out it went in, I went up there and I looked in the hole. They said, go look in the hole. And there was a ball there. And I went, oh, my God.
That's awesome. So, that is great.
So from a hole in one at the golf tournament to start it all off to the World Series, that'd be one hell of a year, Bo.
Oh my God, that would be great. That would be great. I hope that this team plays to their capabilities, and I hope the superstars on our team. We have a lot of them. Mm-hmm. None of them get hurt, but most of all, I think the most important thing is the pitching. If we can keep our pitchers healthy, we can fill in. I'm not saying we can take Harper out or Trey. If they miss a week to 10 days, that's okay. We can't have starting pitchers go down because I don't think the inventory is that great right now to be able to handle two guys going down in the rotation.
Yeah.
No doubt. Bo, we'll let you go. Thanks so much for doing this. We love having you on. You're great. A two-time guest now. Congrats on the hole in one. Enjoy the season.
Okay, we got to get together here and then have a little golf match.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Opening day at our place is tomorrow, and it's going to be like 42 degrees.
That's too cold for me, man. I need that balmy weather.
Yeah, we'll wait till May or June or something.
Yeah,
when it warms
I'm all
up.
In on that. Well, thank you for having me. I've had a good time, and let's go, Phils, and I hope the Flyers get in. I really
do. There you go.
And nice. Six now with Embiid back. We'll see what happens here.
Yeah, it's getting fun.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. All right, guys.
Hey, Larry, thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you.
You got it. Take
care. There he is, Larry Boa. One of my absolute and one of yours as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Absolute favorite guys. So much to talk about with Larry.
Yeah.
I did team with him is awesome.
I did a radio with him, you know, a lot of shows there was a period there where he was really involved with the station. And it's funny, you know, cause the program director would get him on to talk baseball all the time, which of course, but he can go everywhere. Like, because he's a huge sports fan and has always been a sports fan. So he could talk football. He could talk, like, you know, hockey, basketball, you name it.
Yeah.
You know,
and he comes at it from three different perspectives, which are important and I think really interesting. Number one, he comes to it as a former professional athlete that had the right makeup to play in this town mentally and everything that went with it. He had success, obviously, here too.
But he was undersized. He was, you know, he was overlooked, you know, greatly, and nobody really expected him to make it. You know what
I
mean?
Underdog.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, he managed in this town, coached.
Right.
And he knows what it's like from that side of it. And then number three, he's Philadelphia's son. He knows this fan base as a fan.
Right.
And that's important too. So,
and he's in and around the front office side of it too, you know.
Yeah. He's tremendous.
Yeah.
So, and he's and maybe number four here, and probably the most important, he's just a good dude. I mean, he's just a good guy. Like, I love talking to him. He puts me in a better mood. But I imagine he was tough to play for.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
He wore it on his sleeve, Harry. He looks stressed.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's like your boy down there, you know, Torts. Same way.
Yeah, Torts is looking a little weathered by this point.
He's looking a little worn out right now. What's that on his wrist?
Well, he had another procedure done on his thumb. He came in probably about 3 weeks ago now. He comes into our Monday taping, and he walks into the little office that we set up the studio in at the Flyer Skate Zone. And he walks in, he's got this, that's a little cast. He had the big cast on.
Uh-huh.
He walks in, I go, ah, geez, what'd you do? And he's slamming the cast on the table the whole time, going over the mic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we might as well get to them. They've lost five in a row now, and they got the Buffalo Sabres tonight on the road, and a back-to-back because they go tomorrow to Columbus.
Yeah. And the Sabres are coming off a dub where they beat the Caps 6-2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These teams that are out of the playoffs are a real pain in the ass, Harry.
They are. The Caps have lost four straight, but the Islanders have now caught fire, and they're now same 82 points as the Flyers, or 83 points, excuse me. Yeah.
They're actually the team below them in the standings by virtue of regulation wins, where the Flyers have more than they do. So that's the first tiebreaker. Right. Flyers have 36, they have 34. But now all of a sudden the Penguins are in the mix too.
I know.
They win last night. Jesus. Yeah.
Well, and they're ahead. The Islanders have to face the Penguins. The Islanders going forward have a tough schedule, though. They got the Rangers twice, home and away, and that's a great rivalry. You got the Devils on the road, and Nashville at home and Pittsburgh at home to finish things out against Pittsburgh, who's, like you said, back in the mix.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's schedule is tough, though. They still have Boston, Toronto. They have Tampa, and they have Nashville on their schedule, the Islanders and the Red Wings. I don't think they're going to make it, but you never know with Crosby. He'll will them.
Yeah.
Flyers have what you would deem as inferior opponents, Columbus, Montreal, New Jersey, Buffalo, and the Caps. But they
have four straight road games, though, and they've lost five straight. So,
but that's a good time to have the four straight. Every time this year, Harry, that they have gone through one of these spells of losing five out of six or, you know, five out of seven, something like that, they've gone on the road and they've answered the bell. I broke this down on Flyers Daily. They lost five straight games earlier this season. Then they went on the road. They won four. They won seven of their next eight. They won
Somebody's
five.
Somebody's in the studio behind you. Do you see this?
No. Is the old lady in here? She's probably coming in and look for the keys. Then they lost five out of six. They went on to win five straight. Are you looking for the keys? Oh, jeez. She's going up to our camp.
Oh, really?
Yeah, then they lose five straight again. They win four on the road. I mean, that's just the way they are. So they got to answer the bell here, though.
Now, who's in net tonight?
It's a good question. I would not be afraid to go Fedotov.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was watching the other night. He came in there. I mean, the second period, and he looked pretty good.
He did.
Yeah,
and for a guy that just hadn't even practiced with the team yet.
Yeah,
he had a session with Kim Dillaball, the goalie coach. But hadn't practiced with the team, doesn't know where on a dump in or a rim, if he knocks it down, where he's going with the puck, doesn't know the communication calls with his D. But he's in there, he stops a rim behind the net on the PK and just turns and hums it down the ice and ices it.
He's enormous.
Oh my.
I mean, there's not much net to shoot at.
His first save in the NHL was that breakaway by Barzal. Barzal, one of the really gifted players hands-wise. And Barzal's got nobody bearing down on him. So he's got all the time in the world. I think Barzell looks up and goes, holy shit, where's the net?
Right.
And just fires it at him and hits the right. glove.
Yeah. But you they know? Got the all-important point.
Yeah, this all-important point. I can't stand it. You know how I feel about that.
I know.
I mean, they needed it. But
yeah, they do. They did.
End up being big. I actually sat down with him on Wednesday, Harry, with Fedotov.
Fedotov.
Yeah. And I demanded that he sit down.
Really? Yeah.
Because my arms are not long enough to interview him.
Well, you need a picture with him. The one you sent out of us and Embiid a couple years ago. That was pretty funny.
Where I'm on the chair.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I have the picture of Fedotov, and yeah, he is huge.
Can you pull it up here or no?
I can text it to you and then I can pull it up here. So yeah, I can do that
while we
do the, why don't we tell the people about Fudge Kitchen while I pull that up?
All right. You got it. Of course, the official sponsor of Not For Long Media and the OGs podcast, Original Fudge Kitchen, a staple of the Jersey Shore. Jersey Shore season is not far away. They got 6 locations: Cape May, Wildwood, Stone Harbor, Ocean City. They make all of their fudge and treats right in the store. It's going to be guaranteed to be delicious. Stop by and let them know that we sent you. But if you're not able to visit, that's not a problem. They'll ship it right to you. Just go to their website, fudgekitchens.com, and they'll take care of you. Yeah, the shore season, not too far away. We got the Masters next week, and that's really the official rite of spring. And then before too long, Memorial Day weekend will be here.
Yeah, azaleas time, Harry.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Let me show you this picture of me.
All right.
And Ivan Fedotov. Share screen here. Let's see. Where is it? I don't see it. Let me just load it in. I got a way to do it here. Okay. This is a pain in the ass.
This is just ridiculous.
Let me look. I got to figure out where to load it in. What a pain in the asshole this is.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I got to save it. Jesus.
Oh, for God's sake.
This is a pain in the ass. Let me just show you on my phone, for goodness sake. You can see kind of the height.
Yeah.
The disparity.
The disparity.
Yeah, and there is a disparity, Harry.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So now he's not on skates.
No, he's in shorts, Harry.
Okay. Yeah, I know, but shorts and like, what, sneakers or something?
Yeah, and I am not on skates either.
No.
Now, what? I should have brought the wheels with me. I should have brought the skates.
You should have. What do the skates add in the height? Like 3 inches?
Probably about two.
Two? Okay.
Yeah, depending on if you got the step steel blade on there or not. Mm-hmm. For the goalie. Sometimes a goalie will use something called step steel. It's a little thicker piece of steel, so you have a little bit more angle to grab an edge for a push.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it on my phone now, man. You're like up to his shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's every bit 6'7", almost 6'8". And an absolute monster.
Jeez.
Just enormous in there.
Now, how's the English?
A little broken, Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in that interview, so he walks in with Denis Gurianov, who's also a Russian.
Uh-huh.
And he's staying with Denis right now. And Denis came in. I didn't even ask for Denis to come in. Just came in of his own free will in case, you know, he needed some help in what I was asking to explain it to him. Like, I asked him, I said, why'd you become a goalie? How did, you know, what made you choose that position? And he kind of was... And then he looked at Denis, and Denis explained it to him in Russian. Then he answered the question.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't even cut that out of the interview that I heard, because I thought, like, that's part of who he is right now.
Sure, sure.
He'll figure it out. But, yeah, he's big on, like, goalie equipment and the masks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when we got done, I showed him a picture of the background of the home studio with all the masks. He's like, oh, is that a Patrick Wild mask? Like, he was all into it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wow. His story's incredible, so.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Now, I don't know if you were watching last night. The Sixers got out to a huge lead, blew it, got another big lead, blew it, and then found themselves midway through the fourth period down, like, double digits, only to go on a 15-3 run to finish the game and win the game against Miami. Maxey was unbelievable. 37 points, 11 assists. Oubre, 18 and 8 rebounds. And Embiid, who's in his second game back, 29 points in, 32 minutes, 33 minutes, something like that.
Wow.
And they beat the Heat. And the deal is now they have a good chance to win out because their schedule is really pretty light. They have at Memphis, at San Antonio, and a back-to-back coming up. But then they have Detroit, Orlando, and Brooklyn to finish out the year all at home. So if they win out, they're going to get the sixth seed.
Yeah. Wow.
Which is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you avoid that play-in.
Yeah.
And the matchup just is way better for you going forward. So, look, it's all going to come down. Can they get out of round one? And can they put themselves in a position to win round two for the first time since, what, 2001?
Yeah.
To win a second round?
Yeah, I think so.
It's since the Lakers series, right?
That was the finals.
Yeah, I mean, that's the last time they got past the second round.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man, 22, 23 years.
I think it's been that way because I think they – let me check.
One year after that, they didn't get to a conference final after that.
I'm trying to think.
No, they went that year, and I don't think they ever got to a conference final again. So we'll see if they're able to do it. Ultimately, that's what's going to matter. And a big part of it's going to be Embiid, and if he can stay healthy and, you know, what his fitness is like.
Yeah.
That'll be the determining factor. Yeah, I don't think they ever got past the second round after that. Went to the final against the Lakers, took it 5.
They had that series against the Celtics years ago that they lost.
That was the second round, though.
Yeah, I think it was. Let's see. The second round,
Was Doc Rivers the coach of that year?
No, this was before Doc. Second round.
Was Chris Ford the coach of the Celtics then, Harry?
No. Second round in 2011, 2012, they lost to the Celtics. That's the year I'm thinking of.
That's Danny Ainge coaching that team, I think so.
And the year before that, they lost to the Heat in the first series. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that year against the Celtics is when they had Ray Allen and Garnett. They had a good. Did the Celtics win the NBA title that year?
They won. Yeah, because Rondo was on that team.
Yeah.
And he just retired, and he had 2 championships.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's that team.
I think
Mr.
He got
NBA
one.
Strikes again, Harry.
I think he got one with somebody else, too.
Hey, they tell me to stick to hoops.
Yeah. Stick to hoops.
Couple things for you real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
On this date, Harry, you know what April 5th was in 1994?
1994.
30 years ago today.
30 years ago today. Yes, Kurt Cobain.
Correct.
Died.
Yeah, this is the day that they determined he died. They filed him a couple of days later, I think on the 8th or 9th of April in the greenhouse at his Aberdeen, Washington home.
Mm-hmm.
30 years ago.
Wow.
He lived to 27.
How does that age us?
Yeah, in a big time way. I remember I was in a guitar shop at Penn State.
Yeah.
In the music store, picking up some strings or something, and heard it on the radio. The DJ announced it. A guy that I ended up working for, Jonas Hunter,
wow,
announced the death of Kurt Cobain. A lot of people think it was suicide. It was murder, but I digress. That's a whole other episode. But anyway, yeah, 30 years ago, we lost Kurt Cobain. Unbelievable. Jeez. Pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
Well, now, were you a Nirvana guy, Harry?
Not really. I mean, I liked some of their songs, but I wasn't one of these like crazy devotees.
You're not a honk?
That whole era, I was really a big fan of like Alice in Chains,
yep,
Soundgarden, and Stone Temple Pilots were my 3 mm-hmm. go-tos. I loved Pearl Jam's first record, but then their fan base just became like so crazy, I didn't want to really be a part of it.
Yeah.
Like it was just
a part
too
of the
much.
Scene.
Yeah, it was just too much. But I really liked Stone Temple Pilots and Alice in Chains and Soundgarden, Chris Cornell, everything that he was involved with. I was
a little more polished sound on those bands.
Yeah. Temple of the Dog, too, was probably my first experience with all of that.
The Hunger Strike song?
Yeah. The Temple, that whole record, that whole CD was great.
Pushing Forward Back wasn't a good song for me.
Yeah.
Cornell and Eddie Vedder on vocals.
Mm-hmm.
And last thing I have for you. I came to a realization today leaving the Wawa this morning.
Uh-oh.
I finally have developed enough trust in the rear view camera in my vehicle.
Ah.
It took a long time, Harry.
Well, they're so much better now. You have a newer vehicle and they're like HDTV. They're so good.
Yeah, but I was still a grab the other seat and look behind guy.
Oh yeah.
That's the era we grew up in.
Well, yeah. I'm real good with the side mirrors. Like I could back up a tractor trailer.
Yeah.
You know,
with the side mirror going.
Yeah.
You could pull a 30-foot skiff.
Yeah.
And park that thing in city traffic is what you're saying.
Exactly.
But yeah, I finally think I have enough trust where I don't need to second guess the rearview camera, that it is real. It is showing me precisely what is going on behind me.
Right.
I think we've built up, we've come to an understanding.
Oh, good. That's good to know. That's a breakthrough.
That's a huge breakthrough.
Yeah.
Took me a while.
Now you don't have that stupid Fugazi parallel park button, do you? That will park your
truck?
Car. Yeah.
You think they would put that on a truck?
Well, I hope not, but who knows anymore?
Hell no. It's not on the Har Dodge Ram.
You haven't lived until you parallel parked like in a tiny spot in the city with a clutch and a stick shift.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's driving right there.
Yeah. What other people are doing is riding,
exactly.
Not driving.
Yeah.
It's like, do you listen to Jimi Hendrix or do you hear Jimi
Hendrix? Right.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I could butter up the bumpers of the car in front of me and slide that thing in there. I'm a great parallel.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
It was a nightmare teaching my son.
That's a skill, man. You got to have it.
Yeah. It's all angle. It's all geometry, Harry, as they say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I do have one more thing for you.
Okay.
When you logged on today, I always have a little music choice for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Morrison Hotel, the album from The Doors playing.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking, Robbie Krieger, the guitarist of The Doors, your thoughts, Harry?
He's very unique. He's a flamenco guitar player in that he used it, you know, everything was finger picked and, you know, with that, like sort of that Spanish flair to it. He did everything with
a lot of scales
with the hand. Yeah. And he's brilliant. He played that SG. Like, he had a Gibson SG was his favorite axe.
With a tremolo bar on it as well.
Yeah, the tremolo bar. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
People have that on the SG.
He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think he's still alive.
I believe he is as well.
He and Densmore, I think, are both still alive. The drummer,
yeah. Ray Manzarek died a few years ago.
Yeah.
The keyboard player played all the bass parts on the keyboard as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, Robbie Krieger.
He's great.
I'm a huge fan.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's very underrated.
Yeah.
Because when people think of The Doors, they think of Morrison, obviously.
Yeah.
And they kind of.
And Manzarek.
Yeah, right. Because he was basically the lead instrument, the keyboards on most of those songs.
Yeah.
So, you know, Krieger and Densmore were sort of in the background, but he's phenomenal.
Yeah, as much as a guitar player can be part of the back line, like a drummer, he was playing like very few like chord progressions. It was just kind of scales.
You know, Townsend was like that too with the Who.
Agreed. Yeah,
because the bass and the drummer was what really stood out.
Yeah,
you know, he's doing power chords and stuff, but
windmills.
You know, Entwistle's doing the bass leads and stuff
on an Explorer bass.
Is that what it was?
Yeah,
he played that Fender.
Yeah, No, yeah. Gibson.
Oh, Explorer. Is it a Gibson? Okay.
Yeah, big Gibson Explorer bass. But and Townsend would just run around and go nuts like a maniac.
Yeah, yeah.
And Pete. Yeah. So, anything else you need to get to?
Well, we got WrestleMania this weekend.
Oh, that's
right. All the festivities started apparently last night with some some big event that The Rock was headlining, and he was an hour and a half late.
What?
Yeah. He showed up 90 minutes late. And then, of course, you know, he's right into the Rock mode, you know, up on the stage with the microphone. And he's tremendous. He was probably the best ever at it. And he's messing with the Philly crowd about why he was late. I don't know if you saw this. He claimed, of course, that he was watching YouTube videos of Jalen Hurts and the Eagles losing the Super Bowl.
Yeah. That's him being in full-blown character and getting
totally great.
Yeah.
Do you know why The Rock was late?
And yeah.
Everybody's like, why?
Yeah, referring to himself in third person.
Oh, yeah. He's
a great performer, though.
Oh, yeah.
Number One's Listening says, Harry's a trailersman.
Yeah.
You are a trailersman.
Absolutely.
Great hockey name, Pavel.
Pavel
Kucherov. Lane Staley, also 22 years ago, passed away on this day. That's correct.
On the same day?
Yes. They found him in a Seattle apartment. I was on the air that morning at WYSP when it happened.
Yeah, but he might have been dead for a while. Wasn't he like partly decomposed?
But they found him later as well. And they determined that this was the day of his death.
Oh, wow.
April 5th, yes.
Yeah, a heroin overdose, right?
Correct.
Shocker.
Yeah. He was such a good singer. But he totally lost his marbles and lost his way.
Yeah.
So great info from the great listener.
Well, he was always smacked out sitting in a chair singing the songs.
At the Unplugged, yeah.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah. He performed it unbelievably well.
Yeah.
But he looked so skinny. And he was always skinny, but I mean, just
Jerry Cantrell. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And you didn't realize until that Unplugged just how much singing he does.
I know.
Harmonizing and everything. Mm. So, all right, let's wrap it up there. Let's thank Larry Boa one more time for coming on the OGs podcast. We loved having him. We'll be back next week. I guess we got to get in before Thursday because of Masters. So maybe Wednesday next week, Harry?
Well, we could do a Friday or some Friday morning.
Are we going to interrupt your viewing, though, of the azaleas?
We could do that. Yeah, we could do a Friday thing. Yeah, look at this.
Temple
of the Dog. Not Three Dog Night, Harry. Something happened to his network now. It's all it's already defunct.
Yeah, I saw Miss Robin posting that on his Twitter. Yeah. What a mess. He broke ground on the Casa de Bruno.
Yeah.
There on the water too. When he builds that, we got to go down there and do a show from his back deck on the water.
Oh God!
See the crab traps there, huh? We got to go down there. That is worthy of a road trip. We got to take the OGs pod on the road.
Yeah, that would be a good spot. A
little road show.
I got a lot of people down there in that area.
Yeah. We'll find some bar. We'll go down to Key West as well. Do the show from.
Collins got all the people down there.
Yeah, Collins plugged in down there.
Yeah.
So we're going to make that happen. All right. We'll see if we can get it through the budget.
Yeah, right.
The show. Okay. All right, everybody. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next time. Episode 94 next week. Masters week on the OGs podcast.